Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. The White House is defending President Donald Trump's deeply personal social media ridiculing of a well-known television commentator Thursday. Trump on Twitter lambasted Mika Brzezinski, who co-hosts the Morning Joe television talk show with her fiancé, Joe Scarborough. Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said he's not going to sit back and be attacked. When they hit him, he's going to hit back.
And I don't think that it's a surprise to anybody that he fights fire with fire. The things that this show has called him, and not just him, but numerous members of his staff, including myself and many others, are very deeply personal.
Well, there was a quick and firm criticism by members of Congress of the president's comments on the television co-host's appearance. Most notably, senators from the president's own Republican Party chastised Trump. Here's Democratic Senator Jackie Speier.
This is beneath the presidency of the United States. We strongly believe that this cannot go on any longer. It is destructive, it is repugnant, and again, it is beneath the presidency of the United States.
It's not immediately clear what drew Trump's ire about Brzezinski and Scarborough. She, on Thursday's program, did discuss fake Time magazine covers that had been hanging on the walls at several of the president's golf courses, as initially reported by the Washington Post. Security experts say the cyber attack that was locked up computers around the world while demanding a ransom may not be an extortion attempt after all, but an effort to create havoc in Ukraine. This is VOA. The United States implemented on Thursday night new travel rules requiring visa applicants from six majority Muslim nations to have a close relationship with a family member or business in the U.S. in order to be eligible to be admitted to the country. Senior administration officials earlier Thursday outlined how consular officials should proceed with the visa applications for people from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Protesters and activists showed up at airports across the country.
We're here to make sure that nobody is being harmed. We're not going to take anything for granted. And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. 1,000 lawyers showed up to JFK last time, and 1,000 lawyers have been emailing me since Monday. I promise. My inbox is blowing up with lawyers because they are ready to come back out. They want to come back out. They are going to fight, and we are going to use our courts, and we are not going to let this administration take our courts, attack our courts and what they say and the protections that they are offering us.
Anyone in transit to the U.S. with travel scheduled before July 6th will be allowed to enter. Those with travel booked after will be addressed, quote, later, according to senior administration officials. Australia's new national census shows for the first time that more migrants are now arriving from Asia than Europe as the country's demographics change rapidly. Among the findings, almost half of all Australians were either born overseas or have a foreign-born parent. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Australia is becoming less white and has never been as culturally diverse. More residents are living in capital cities than ever. The national census is held every 5 years and gives an in-depth look at how the country is changing. David Kalish is from the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Australia is growing, particularly in our capital cities, where more than two-thirds of Australians live.
For the first time, more migrants are arriving in Australia from Asia, mostly India and China, rather than Europe. The 2016 census has revealed that 40% of the overseas-born population were born in Asia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Trump administration is taking steps to expand oil drilling in the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans as President Donald Trump continues to push for U.S. energy dominance in the global market. The Interior Department says it's rewriting a five-year drilling plan established by the Obama administration with an eye toward opening areas in the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans. It's one of six initiatives the president unveiled Thursday in hopes of generating more energy exports and jobs. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Friday, June 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The people of the DRC are marking 57 years of independence today, but will elections be held this year?
We really gave the Electoral Commission money to help it to achieve the registration of 30 million out of 42 million. I think that is something that must be considered as an achievement for the elections to be held in Congo.
Lambert Mende is Minister of Information of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The special envoy of the UN Secretary General ends a visit to Burundi with a promise to help find lasting peace. South Sudan women demand more representation to help move their country's peace process forward. And a number of Malawi lawmakers are accused of embezzling development funds.
There are reports that in the district councils, the local development funds, some of them have not been spent properly, and those members of parliament, 20 of them, don't face the force of the law.
Nicola Dawusi is Malawi's information minister, and a simple malaria intervention in African schools leads to a big improvement in students' performance. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of the Democratic Republic of Congo are today Friday marking the 57th independence anniversary of their country amid violence in the east and uncertainty whether the country will hold long-awaited elections by this year. Information Minister Lambert Mende denies opposition accusations that President Joseph Kabila is deliberately procrastinating holding the elections by the end of this year, as mandated by the December 31st, 2016 peace agreement. Mende says the Electoral Commission has registered 30 million voters out of a total of 42 million prospective voters, thanks to the DRC government's financial support, he said. Mende denies the government has canceled the usual military parade because of security concerns.
I am wondering how one can cancel a military parade that have never been scheduled. That is a lie. We have never scheduled a military parade, James. We do make a military parade each 5th or 10th anniversary. And we are now celebrating 57th anniversary. So there have not been scheduled any military parade.
President Kabila, I'm sure he's going to be addressing the country on Friday. How would he describe the situation in the country?
The president wants to address the country. He has already sent a writing message because he's a bit sick. You know, he made a very long trip countryside and he came back and is suffering with a little fever. So he won't address the people. But he sent a letter to apologize for that. But we have read in the television, the radio, all the media.
The opposition is accusing the president of deliberately trying to delay holding elections this year.
We have an opposition that is fond of, you know, writing a lot of lies in order to discredit the president. Even when it rains, it is the fault of the president. When it doesn't rain, it is the fault of the president. So we are used with such accusations. I can't respond to that. It seems that this is the only thing they can do. They have no alternative. They don't have ideas. Just, you know, abusing the president, trying to discredit the president. The president is coming back from Kasai as we are talking, and he did it by road. That is why he is a bit sick, because he made more than 2,000 kilometers by road in order to visit all small villages where problems occurred, in still congratulating him and saying to him that he did well to go and visit our compatriot. They are trying just to discredit him. It is a shame only.
The last time I spoke with you, Mr. Minister, and I asked about why the government had not scheduled elections, you said it was not the government's responsibility, it was the Elections Commission. But yet in most countries, it's the government that provides the funding for the election commission, and the government appoints the election commission chairperson. Don't you think that the government has some, directly or indirectly, whether elections will be held in the DRC or not?
James, I don't know where you get information that elections will not be held in Congo. Per information I have, the Electoral Commission is doing well. And as we are talking, you and me, they managed now already to register 30 million of voters out of 42 million that have to be registered. That is something that is a big achievement. And this was done thanks to the funds given to the Electoral Commission by the government.
Minister, thank you very much again. And let me say congratulations on your 57th independence anniversary.
Thank you very much, James.
Lambert Mende is Minister of Information of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Malawi's information minister says lawmakers alleged to have misappropriated funds budgeted for their respective constituencies will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. An audit conducted by PricewaterhouseCoopers found that about $110,200 went missing from the development fund of 16 districts. And Information Minister Nicolas Daoussi says about 20 parliamentarians are alleged to have misappropriated the funds. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that the government of President Peter Mutharika is displeased with the outcome of the audit.
There are reports that in the district councils, the local development funds, some of them have not been spent properly, according to today's newspaper of the 29th June, and those members of parliament, 20 of them, they'll face the force of the law. So definitely they risk an arrest if they are found guilty.
As members of parliament and as a different branch of government, are they not immune to prosecution?
No, they're not. They're not. Nobody is above the law. They're not.
What sort of punishment could they face if they are found guilty?
Well, that would be the duty of the Director of Public Prosecution and the Anti-Corruption Bureau, because it hinges on possibly corrupt practices or the misuse of government funds. They will know how to craft and frame the charges. But otherwise, if somebody is guilty, then the courts and the legal minds will make the right charges.
Is this part of the government's drive to fight corruption in Malawi?
It is indeed a part of the government's fight for corruption. We want to get rid of anybody being seen to be corrupt.
Some critics are saying that it seems that opposition members of parliament are being targeted by this latest foray of news coming out following the allegations of misappropriation of funds.
Well, those people are being unfair because amongst the 20 members of parliament, we don't know whether they were from opposition or from the ruling. So to start pointing fingers, that is witch hunting, that is not neither here nor there. By the way, if someone has committed a crime, he doesn't care whether he's in opposition or he's in ruling. What matters is that somebody has committed a crime and should answer. It should be answerable before the court of law.
Was the audit done by state or by an independent audit firm?
The audit was done by an independent audit firm, PricewaterhouseCoopers.
I heard some of the funds that were supposed to build bridges and all that, shoddy work was done. How are Malawians reacting to this?
They are expecting those people to face the law. They are expecting those people to be in the court of law so that they answer, and apparently they reverse the money that they misused.
So what should the people of Malawi expect following this latest news coming out of the misappropriation of funds?
They must expect that the government has not sacred cows and that government is fighting corruption and that they want whatever penny should benefit the common man in the village.
How soon will government come out with measures to ensure that the country gets the worth of the money budgeted for developmental activities?
As soon as possible. The parliament is rising tomorrow, and after that, then after the wheels of justice will start grinding and rolling. We want to assure the Malawi nation that the government under President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika will fight corruption in every corner, regardless of who that person is in a society. And that for those that are in trust entrusted with public funds must make sure that they spend according to the intended purpose. Once they are found stealing or corrupting with the misuse of government funds, then definitely the full force of the law, without any selectivity, no sacred cows. But that to the people of Malawi, they must be less assured that the government of Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika want to be clean and save people to have hospitals, schools, drugs in hospitals, and also all social services without anybody stealing the money.
Nicola Dausi is Minister of Information of Malawi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, June 30th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The UN Secretary General's Special Envoy, Michel Kafando, has ended a three-day visit to Burundi as part of his mandate to promote peace and sustainable development in the country. Moses Aviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Mr. Kafando, who is also former Burkina Faso president, met with Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza in Bujumbura to discuss the status of the current political and security crisis in the country. Mr. Kafando was appointed by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to lead and coordinate the UN's efforts to promote peace and sustainable development in Burundi. He says that as a diplomat, he will try to make his mission a success.
La paix.
Peace is something difficult to resolve. It's true, there are two of my predecessors. They did what they have to do. They finished their work and sometimes in a difficult condition. But everyone has his own experience.
Both Burundian government and opposition rejected appointment of Said Djinnit and Jamal Ben Omar as special envoys. Both parties accused the two of bias. The Secretary General's Special Envoy Kafando says that he will do whatever it takes to find the lasting peaceful solution to the Burundian crisis.
Je ne dis pas que manger.
I can't say that I have a magic stick, but what I can say is that I am a diplomat. I am a soldier for peace, and that's why I was called to bring my contribution. I will do that in the name of Africa. So the mission that I accepted is certainly difficult, but I will do whatever I have to do to make it a success.
The UN Secretary General's Special Envoy is also mandated to assist the efforts of the East African community in facilitating a political dialogue among the Burundian stakeholders. Since the regional mediated dialogue started in 2015, there has been no common understanding between the Burundian government and the opposition, most of whose members have fled the country. Jean-Claude Karerwa is President Pierre Nkurunziza's spokesman.
We expect from him to do better than his predecessors. As you know, before he took on Said Djinnit and Jamal Ben Omar, some flaws and shortcomings have been observed throughout the proceedings, and we look forward to him doing better than his predecessors.
Burundi is slowly returning to some normality following the violent protests that erupted in 2015, leading to the deaths of more than 500 people. Still, the government is reluctant to dialogue with the opposition, especially those the government accuses of being behind the 2015 failed coup. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
South Sudanese women are calling on their government to implement provisions of the August 2015 peace agreement, which guarantee that at least 25% of positions in the executive arm of government be occupied by women. The women also want representation in the top leadership of government in order to influence policies. Nabio Biagio reports from Juba.
South Sudanese women met in Juba to discuss the findings of a gender analysis of the 2015 peace agreement. The analysis was part of a report prepared by the Women's Monthly Forum, a pressure group that works to ensure that both parties implement the accord. The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, funded the exercise. In the report, the forum acknowledged good provisions in the agreement that ensure women's participation in the transitional government of national unity. The agreement requires the SPLM faction in government to nominate 4 women ministers, while the SPLM in opposition is to nominate 3. The agreement also requires the warring parties to appoint at least 2 women as deputy ministers. Suzanne Felix, the chairman of Jubek States Women Union, says, only some of those provisions have been implemented.
We are talking of the percentage of women participation, and it is 25% in all the branches, especially in the executive decision-making. We need to be included, and we believe we will be included.
Betty Sunday is Chief Executive Officer at the Community Empowerment for Progress organization. She says while women's participation is guaranteed, although to a limited degree, the government should give more important roles to women in government.
We need women to be in some of the positions that the government is giving, like for example in the states. There are no female states, no female governors. We have 33 states or 34 states. In those 34 states, women are just one or two women, if I'm not mistaken. Well, they deputize the governors. Women participation is key to development.
Veronica Gordon is the deputy coordinator at the Women's Monthly Forum. She says the 2015 peace agreement should have set aside key roles for women to assume in the various branches of government, including the top leadership.
There is no senior level position in the executive. For example, the presidential position, the vice president, the first vice president, set aside for a woman. The other gap is the agreement does not contain a specific provision providing for the participation of women in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly and the Council of States. And the agreement does not contain a specific provision providing for the participation of women in the judiciary.
The women also say they must be represented in the top leadership of government in order to influence policies. Betty Oboy is Commissioner for South Sudan Peace Council, a government-appointed body that oversees and advises on peace-related matters. Oboy says women must lead some of the commissions tasked with promoting national reconciliation and heal the wounds all South Sudanese have suffered during the war.
For instance, the most important is the truth, healing and reconciliation, whereby they say at least out of the seven commissioners, two have to be women. But does the common woman understand that?
Oboy says the government and civil society must convince women about the importance of their participation in reconciliation and in politics so they can fill some of the various roles now becoming available to them. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
New research suggests that the ability of children in Africa to perform well in school could be dramatically improved through the provision of basic malaria education and treatment. While less fatal among older children, malaria infections often impact on a child's ability to concentrate. Henry Rochelle reports.
Most malaria prevention programs focus on the under fives. Many older school children continue to harbor malaria parasites without displaying any symptoms of the disease. Left untreated, the child's health often deteriorates, says lead researcher Dr. Sean Clark of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The malaria parasites destroy the red blood cells, and as a consequence of that, you get chronic anemia. In children. Generally, children who are anemic feel weak, they're tired, they're generally lethargic, they're going to be less active and less fully engaged.
The research involved nearly 2,000 school children in Mali, led by Save the Children and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, alongside the National Institute for Public Health Research in Mali. Around half the children were given a malaria control package delivered by their teachers, which included prevention education, insecticide-treated nets, and anti-malarial treatment. Malaria infection rates fell from 80% to just 5%, and cases of anemia were almost halved compared to the control group. Again, Dr. Clark.
And the children's capacity to pay attention for longer was increased.
Save the Children has helped expand the program to 400 schools in Mali. It is the second African country to host the trial.
So the first study was done in Kenya, an area of year-round transmission. The study was done in Mali, an area with malaria concentrated in just a few months. And the fact that we saw similar results in both settings would suggest that where malaria is a significant problem and the levels of infection are high, then you might expect to see similar impact in other settings.
Aid workers say preventing anemia in Malian schoolgirls is particularly important because of high teenage marriage and pregnancy rates. Anemia during pregnancy can lead to a low birth weight and a higher risk of child mortality. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the withdrawal of Angola from the hosting of the 2017 edition of the AfroBasket Championships. With Angola's withdrawal, Tunisia will again submit an application for a joint organization with Senegal. In the event of a green light from FIBA Africa, the competition will take place from September the 8th to the 16th, and each country will host two pools of four teams each in the first round, while the quarterfinals, semifinals, and final will take place in Tunisia. And now to table tennis, where Africa's highest-ranked player in the world, Nigeria Aruna Quadri, says he will not be focusing only on Egypt's Omar Asar when the 2017 ITTF Africa Cup serves off in Agadir, Morocco on Saturday. According to him, there are more threats to his dream than just focusing solely on the Egyptian. Aruna Quadri, who has been listed among the Foreign Legion competing at the Maiden Ultimate Table Tennis Championships in India and at the moment representing Egypt's Al Ahly in the ongoing African Club Championships, believes he has more competitors than Asar to battle against in the African Cup. And in athletics news, South Africa's Wade van Niekerk clocked the best time ever in the men's 300 meters with a time of 30.81 seconds at the IAAF World Challenge League event in the Czech Republic on Wednesday. The previous world record of 30.85 seconds was set at an altitude in Pretoria in 2000 by American Michael Johnson. It was the second time the 24-year-old South African has upset Johnson, having broken his 17-year-old 400 meters world record when racing to victory at last year's Rio Olympic Games.
Yeah, I'm very pleased. Still a positive step forward for the season. The nerves was quite high seeing that I'm doing the 300 today. And yeah, I'm blessed, I'm grateful, and thank you to the people from Ostrava.
And now to football news. Tanzania have qualified for the quarterfinals of the 2017 COSAFA Cup despite being held to a 1-1 draw by Mauritius in their final Group A match at Mulunya Stadium on Thursday evening. The Taifa Stars finished on 5 points, the same total as Angola, who were held to a 0-0 draw by Malawi in a concurrent match at the Royal Bafokeng Stadium, but placed first thanks to a superior goal difference. They progressed into the last eight and will now face host and defending champions South Africa in the third quarterfinal set for Sunday evening at Royal Bafokeng. But for South Africa's head coach Stuart Baxter, winning the COSAFA Cup tournament will not be his priority.
We need more out of it than just a positive result. We need information. So I want to form that sort of pathway that young players can follow. That it's not just hit or miss.
And finally, in the CAF Champions League this weekend, Al Ahly Tripoli are under pressure to bag the full 3 points as they meet USM Alger in their fifth CAF Champions League Group B encounter later this evening. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, June 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Zainab Abdel Rahman, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Watch out for the hottest music and music news from across the continent this Sunday. Hear the fascinating story and music of Papillon from Kenya. Find out who's headlining Canada's Nuit d'Afrique Festival in Montreal. Discover new and old music, too, from across the continent. Ever heard of the Malawi Mouse Boys? How about Songhoi Blues or Neba Solo? Gangbe Brass Band? Well, get to it all, peeps. Tune in, Music Time in Africa, this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Oh, yeah.